Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time to talk about patents, trademarks, copyrights, and licensing agreements with Jill Gilbert-Wellitock, who is a registered patent attorney, a CPA, and the managing attorney of Absolute Technology Law in Milwaukee. She currently represents over 200 patent and trademark clients and is the co-author of the Independent Inventor's Handbook, published by Workman. And thank you so much, Jill, for agreeing to another show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel carried a front-page story last month that was titled Patent Backlog Clogs Recovery. It is said that a huge backlog at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office meant that a five-year wait to issue a patent. I believe you said the vast majority of patents do not take that long.
Well, I can't speak to the vast majority, but that is not the experience in our office.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the reporters likely reported a correct analysis of their research and found that there were a lot of patents taking that long. But there are a number of things that inventors, whether they're individual inventors or inventors within corporations, can do to ensure that their patents move through the system a lot more quickly. Most patents in our office issue in about 18 months to 2 years, with some notable exceptions for software patents, which do tend to take longer to get through the system.
If you have questions as we move along, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address, talk@wpr.org. Where are the proposals for patent reform?
Proposals for patent reform, well, one that is going to be of particular interest to individual inventors is a change from the first-to-invent rule to a first-to-file rule for patent protection. It's a proposed change, but inventors should be prepared for this. Right now, under U.S. law, you have a one-year grace period from the time that you disclose an invention to get that patent application on file. And the patent office generally awards patent protection to the inventor that can prove that they were first to invent an invention. It's a presumption. That presumption will still be in place, but it will be less strong, and there'll be a presumption that the first to file for subsequent challenges to a patent application, that the first inventor to file is entitled to that protection.
Okay. And there were about 1,350 patents issued to Wisconsin inventors last year. What is the difference between a good idea and a marketable idea?
That's a good question, and that is one that usually you should not pose to your patent attorney. Patent attorneys can tell you if something is novel and likely to make it through the patent office based on prior art, whether it's likely to be issued. But markets are something that the inventor and people that have a vision of how to sell this product and what who will buy it, that have that vision and have done that research, that's an assessment that a patent attorney does not make. For example, I'm not skilled in identifying consumer markets. I don't know what a teenager or a senior adult will buy. That's not part of my training, nor will I have done that research when you come in with your product. Usually what I ask inventors before they seek patent protection, they say, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think it will sell? And I'll say, what research have you done? Have you looked into the market? Have you looked at similar products, how they've done in the market? Have you looked for other things that people have tried to bring to market, perhaps unsuccessfully, and differentiated your product? So I'm not giving them the answers to those questions, but I am making sure that they have asked them so that they're ready to go forward with investing in patent protection. And sometimes inventors and people that want to bring ideas to market haven't thought about those issues, so we'll refer them to the Inventors Forum, which we meets once a month and helps give them some guidance on those questions, which are really beyond the scope of what a patent attorney can.
That's right. You formed the support group for Inventive Types, which meets monthly, the Downtown Milwaukee Inventors and Entrepreneurs Forum. And when is that in the month?
The next one will be October 28th at 5:45. It'll be in the Germania building downtown. There's plenty of parking here. And we have, I guess support group is right, we have a lot of serial inventors, people that have brought one product, more than one product to market, and have learned a lot about product development and marketing, and go back and work on another one using what they've learned. And so they come to the group, and they're an important part of the group. They help other inventors along. We have marketing, manufacturing people. Last month we had a wonderful speaker, Deb Malwicki from University of Whitewater. She's head of the entrepreneurship program there. And she talked about the 10 biggest mistakes inventors make. And she has a PhD in marketing and lots of experience. So it's a place where you can get answers from all kinds of people, patent attorneys, marketing people, manufacturers, overseas sourcing agents that can tell you about making things in China. You know, questions that I don't know the answers to, but I'm interested in hearing myself.
Okay. Robert in Green Bay is on the line. Let's go there. Hello, Robert.
Hi, this is Robert. I am a part-time freelance aerial photographer. I take mainly rural landscape pictures of farms and homes. And one of my pictures was used of a large farm set of buildings in a statewide farm newspaper publication in the construction division, which is a once-a-year publication, one of the farm newspapers in the state. I did not sign any papers giving my photograph away to this building corporation of this farmer's farm. Now, I originally sold the picture to the farmer. Any comments or questions?
You originally sold the picture to a farmer?
Yes. It was of his farm. And he, in turn, must have turned it over to the building contractor, and it was used in a statewide publication for advertising, commercial use.
Okay, that's an interesting question. So you took a picture, you sold, were you hired to take a picture of that farm by that farmer?
No, we do these freelance in an area, and they're a cold call. They're not ordered, they're not pre-ordered.
Okay, so it seems like there's some confusion about what rights were transferred. It sounds like the farmer probably thought he had the whole bundle of rights associated with the copyright, and you thought that you had just transferred certain rights. And copyright's an interesting area of law because people always talk about copyright in the singular, but it's actually a plural, a bundle of rights, the right of public display, the right of attribution, which means the right to have your name on it, the right to copy it and distribute it. So we're not really sure what you and the farmer intended when you sold that picture, which rights you were transferring. Did you have a contract with the farmer?
No, I did not.
Okay, so it sounds like there would be arguments on both sides. There is something called the doctrine of first sale, where if you sell a copy, for example, of a record album, someone can resell that record album, but they can't make copies of it and distribute it publicly. So it sounds like that's something that might be analogized to the situation, but there wasn't any specific agreement with the farmer. It was a photograph of his farm that was not commissioned. So there are arguments on both sides. But if you notified the publication?
You broke up. Please repeat.
I'm sorry.
Did
have
you
notify
the publication?
Yes, and I have received no response.
Okay. Okay, well, I can help you offline with a letter to them, but it may be that some compensation is appropriate. If you're still in the business of taking these freelance photographs and selling them, I think that I would sit down and think about what rights you intend to transfer and keep and document that. It sounds like a good photo. You probably have other good photos, and you might not want this to happen again.
That's correct.
Okay, well, if you contact me offline, I will be glad to help you with this and post a more complete answer for everyone on the website.
Okay. How should I contact you again?
Let's see. I have a website, www.milwaukeepatents.com.
Okay.
And I'll put a little page up. Give me about 2 days, but I'll put a little question and answer page from some of the questions from the show. And,
thank you.
And put some more detailed links up there.
So that was milwaukeepatents.com?
Yes.
All right. And good luck to you, Robert. Thanks very much for your call. And let's go to Nancy in Muskego next. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Just wanted to totally disagree with you on this. I've had experience personally with trying to get a patent through with a very reputable firm that I don't know if I can say the name on the phone line. But anyway, a major firm in Milwaukee. And even one of the attorneys working on this was an investor in our company. And it was a technology type of patent, and we knew that would take longer. But however, now Microsoft and Apple and everybody else has this technology, but again, because it took so long and we were not allowed, just because the process took so long, and $30,000 later, you know, and you still have nothing. So I think that it is fair to say that it does take that long. We just finally got a letter from the attorney saying 7 years later now, you know, do you still want to do something with this, you know, kind of thing, because they just denied it.
Sure, Nancy. You know what? I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is a common issue, and there are patents that are taking that long, and it sounds like a software technology. I'm getting that because you indicated that Microsoft...
It's not necessarily software, but it's a way to do things using satellite and things, but it's not necessarily software that drives it. Obviously, there's some of that in there, but you're right. I mean, now it's just very disheartening. Because you did have a really good idea.
You felt you had some competitors that beat you to market because you were waiting to have your patent allowed before you developed this?
No, we had it. We put it in the documentation, and we did our 60-page analysis and showed them what to do and all these things.
I'm going to keep you on track a little bit here. But, Nancy, you had you had investors, and you had a product that you wanted to launch for something that could be done with software. Are you comfortable telling us what results this product was to achieve, or what problem it was going to solve for the consumer?
It was actually going to be a shopping online, basically through your cell phone or through a card, like a credit card, like a gold card, basically online.
We got to wrap this up in about a minute or so.
Okay. Anyway,
Nancy, I'm going to give you some quick observations. In the marketplace, there are billions of people working on ideas to meet consumer preferences. So you will have competition for any idea. Being the first to market, it can be very important, and you'll see many companies launch products with patents pending, not issued patents. So, you know, sometimes being that first market presence is more important than having a patent issued. And it sounds like these were companies that were able to develop a product, launch it more quickly, and get consumers on board than you might have been as a small company. The fact that your patent was pending for 7 years didn't necessarily mean that you could not market and develop your product. So I think there's two issues confused there, but certainly a seven-year time lag would be of concern to any inventor, and, you know, there are...
Jill, we've got to stop there, and we'll come back, and we will pick up more questions from the audience as we talk patents, trademarks, copyrights, and licensing agreements with Jill Gilbert Welly Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network as we talk with Jill Gilbert Welly Talk about patents, trademarks, copyrights, and licensing agreements. Jill is a registered patent attorney, a CPA, managing attorney of Absolute Technology Law in Milwaukee, and the co-author of the Independent Inventor's Handbook published by Workman. And again, Jill, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
We had an email from Rick in Oconomowoc who asks, what kind of a patent would he need for a special picture frame that he's created, and how much would it cost? And as I was thinking about that, I decided to go to the Independent Inventor's Handbook, and there's a section in there on chart your course. So we've got the spark of creativity, the special picture frame, and then there are a series of questions that have to be asked and answered before someone can decide whether or not they're in line or should have a patent. One of them is there a need to be met or a problem to be solved? If the answer is yes, do you have a creative solution to the problem? If the answer is yes, is your solution novel and patentable? And as we're going along here, we had earlier calls where people were spending $30,000 and more. What does it cost to get a patent?
Well, Jim, I wish I had clients that spent $30,000 routinely in this office. But for a consumer product, there's several stages in filing for patent protection. The first step would probably be a search. For a consumer product like a picture frame, probably $700 to see what's out there and what aspects of this apparatus might be novel or experimental enough to protect. And by experimental, that's my term. That means has there been experimentation, research, has the person identified a unique market feature that's going to allow us to argue the novelty of that feature before the patent office.
Mm-hmm.
We can give you a pretty good assessment of that. If we go forward in that search, it probably is about, by the time the client has spent about $1,500 to $2,000, they'll have a provisional patent application, which gives them a filing date and the patent pending status. Now, if it's a software patent, you can double these amounts. Those are more complicated if there's a lot of electronic circuitry. But still, we're not talking a lot of money at this stage to file the provisional patent application and get you that filing date and get you the patent pending status. The patent pending status puts competitors on notice of that you were the first to file this application. There's always a dispute about who may have been first to invent, but it becomes a very important date under the law.
Mm-hmm.
Usually inventors go forward with their marketing research, trying to get that product out there and see if people will buy it before they go to the next stage, which is converting the provisional application into a non-provisional application, and that means getting the application ready to be examined by the patent office. A non-provisional patent application will have claims in it, which are kind of like the meets and bounds in a real estate deed.
Mm-hmm.
It defines the scope of your invention, and you begin a process of negotiating with the patent office as to what they will or won't allow. Now, I don't know what the features of the picture frame are, but obviously arguing a picture frame is going to be a lot more apparent as to the structural differences and what we're discussing than something more abstract like the last caller, I believe, was Nancy, with an online shopping kind of method utilizing a card. There's going to be a difference in the complexity of the negotiations that goes with the patent office. Converting a provisional to a non-provisional application, you have to do that within 1 year filing the provisional application, which means that you have a year to get that invention out there, test it, market it, refine it, so that you are ready to write those claims, and that's what that year is supposed to be used for your marketing, your research, and your analysis. When you do that conversion process, it's usually a few thousand more dollars, and there'll be a filing fee with the patent office. If you're a small entity, it's about $450. It's about twice that if you're a large company. So you'll have several thousand dollars invested at that point, and the patent office will then examine your claims and look at how broad of a scope are you claiming? How much other technology do you want to preempt? And examiners, their job is to make sure that you don't claim something that you're not in possession of, that you can't make or use or tell others how to make or use in that application, and that you're not preempting other people from developing technology when you're not rightfully in possession of that technology. So in other words, the narrower the scope of the claims, the more specific to what you're selling, the easier the negotiations are for your attorney and the faster it will get through. Attorneys like to have very broad claims, and I imagine inventors like to have them too, but when you make those claims so broad that they seem vague to the patent office, particularly in the software area, and they don't cover a product that you're actually selling, the job becomes that much harder. There can be one or two office actions from the patent office. Those are a couple thousand dollars each. We obviously try to get the patent allowed in as few of office actions as possible without negotiating away the scope of protection in a way that's not going to serve the inventor well. But during this whole negotiation process, which can take a few years, inventors should be marketing those inventions, bringing their product forward. A patent pending will put your competitors on notice that you have filed for patent protection and that your patent will be issued at some point. It helps define some of your rights for outside investors and for competitors. What you do need an issued patent for is to stop other people from selling, making, selling, or using your invention, to actually stop them from doing that. The patent needs to be issued. Investors like to see issued patents, but very often they will invest in pending patents, and with new companies that's most often the case.
Mm-hmm.
But patents will define the scope of your invention and help you license it to others and bring value to your invention. You certainly can go to market without a patent, but many inventors wish down the road that they had define the scope of that protection and nail down their intellectual property rights.
Jill Gilbert Welitok is our guest, and Greg is our next caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question because I have been discouraged as to following a patent process by a relative who works with a large corporation and does quite a bit of patent work for them, with them. He looked at what I was pursuing and said that actually independent applications, the average guy, are not successful often at all, and that most of the successful patents are actually issued to corporations such as his that have, a whole staff working on that presentation.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't get the caller's name.
His name is Greg.
Greg. Greg, an idea is an idea, and one thing that you can say about the Patent Office is if your application is properly drafted, the scope of your claims is something that they can examine and identify what your invention is, and it's novel. They really don't care if you're a large corporation or an individual inventor, but they do need clarity to your claims. They do need you to follow the rules. There are some large firms that will make a mess of it, and there are some individual inventors that will make a mess of it, but the Patent Office doesn't have any particular biases in their searching or allowance techniques. Of course, an attorney or a patent agent, someone with experience in the system, will be a more skilled negotiator on your behalf, but certainly if your idea is novel and it's marketable, you should not feel discouraged because you feel that there is some bias in the system against independent inventors.
When you're referring to negotiations, the negotiations you're speaking of are between your attorney and who?
The patent examiner. The Patent Office employs patent examiners in various technology fields whose job it is to review the claims that you've submitted and compare it to what is in the prior art to see if what you have is in fact novel, and also to make sure that your claims are appropriately drafted, clear and definite, so that when they issue your patent, it's apparent to the world what the scope of protection is that you've been awarded, what you are legally entitled to preempt others from doing.
And are those negotiations done in person or through the mail or what?
Well, usually they're both. What will happen is a patent examiner will do an initial review of your application and send what's called an office action. Occasionally they send a notice of allowance, but that happens rarely. Usually they will send something called an office action, which indicates what concerns they have about issuing your application. Either they feel it's not novel, it's obvious over the prior art, there might be ambiguities or informalities in your claim language. They will identify those things in what's called an office action. It's a correspondence that you are invited to respond to. You can request an interview with an examiner, which is something that we frequently do, and discuss proposed amendments to your claims over the phone prior to submitting your office action. And then you'll submit that, and either your application will be allowed, or you'll get a second office action. Sometimes it's that office action can either be final or non-final, indicating whether the examiner will decide patentability after they review your response to that office action. Then there are subsequent procedures, but that's generally how it goes. So the more clarity you have in your claims, and the better the person who's working on your behalf or you are able to communicate with the patent examiner, the more smoothly the process will go.
It sounds like Greg, who lives in Milwaukee, should attend your support group.
Yes, it's funny that you call it a support group. Yeah, our Inventors Forum, we meet at 135 West Wells, which is the Germania building. Our next meeting will be October 28th. At 5:45, there's no registration. I was surprised last time at how many people came, but what the format of that is: everyone goes around the room and lets us know what resources they have to provide or what they're working on. Inventors are encouraged not to make enabling disclosures if they haven't, protected their concept with a pending patent and they might be seeking patent protection. We'll give you some guidelines for that. We have some inventors that will present, that are a little further along, that will present prototypes and inventive concepts for our panel and for the inventors in the room, that will give them feedback on some questionnaire forms. That's kind of fun, as to how much they pay for the invention, where they think they might want to market it. That's a fun part of our program. And then we usually have some speakers on issues like the ones that have been raised today.
So October 28th, 5:45 p.m. at the Germania Building, 135 West Wells,
yes,
in Milwaukee. All right, Greg, good luck to you. And let's go to Mary Lou. I'm sorry, let's go to Mary Lou in Lake Tomahawk. Hi, Mary Lou.
Good afternoon. I've got a question. About 10 years ago, I bought a product, and it worked so well. I liked it so much, I wanted to buy another one. Looked all over, could not find it. Subsequently, I called the manufacturer to see if I could buy it directly from them, and they told me that they developed the mold. They have the mold, but they are no longer making the product. The person who commissioned the manufacturer of the product, who holds the patent, is nowhere to be found. I'm just wondering how a person could rejuvenate the manufacturer of that product, and all I'm interested in is the marketing of it. I think it's such a good idea. I really think it would sell with some good marketing.
Mary Lou, that's an important point. There are lots of good ideas that fail for lack of marketing, and ultimately, you know, patent is just a piece of paper and only as valuable as the person that markets it. What we can do is we can search for that patent, if you know that it was, in fact, an issued patent, on the Internet. We can go to www.uspto.gov or Google. Google Patents has a great search engine, and we can see if we can find the name of that inventor and track them down. Usually on the face of the patent, it'll indicate the name of the inventor and the city, at least, where they reside. We can also get some access to public online to public patent files and records relating to that application, see if we can track down the inventor that way. Patents are usually issued for a 20-year term, so that inventor may very well be willing to license their patent rights to you so that you can help them with the marketing, and that would certainly be a win-win situation.
Okay, so if I can, in fact, somehow track down the patent holder, then we could work together that way. If I can't track him down, you said there was a 20-year length of time that would be good for?
Well, from the date that they filed that application, so we can see if it's an expired patent. Failing all else, it may be that this product needs some updating or some modification. If you absolutely can't contact the inventor and you want to avoid infringing their patent rights, we may be able to do an effective design around. But you know, that would involve you to, you know, cause you to then become involved in defining your own intellectual property rights, and it seems like it would be much more efficient to license those rights from the inventor if we can track them down, and they'd probably be more than happy to have you market something they weren't able to successfully.
Mary Lou, good luck to you in your search, and let's go to Don next in Phillips to talk to Jill Gilbert Welly Talk. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I have two things, but I'll just try to keep it brief for you. I applied for a patent this last July, and everything is going through so far. You know, we've got the drawings, got the test parts, everything is working fine, everything is ready to go. But the question that came to my mind as I talked to my patent officer, I was going to go through one of these Patents for Dummies books, but I felt that I need to have somebody that's more reputable. So I got behind there, and the question I asked them, I said, when we finally get the date where I can finalize this and say this is, if we got that year of during that process, he said there's such a backlog right now through the system that when after a year comes up, even if you're not patented fully, your product gets put out that anybody around the world can see it. And that's when one of my questions of that other caller you had that sat for 7 years, maybe her idea got thrown out into the market, and that's how they got a hold of it and while she was waiting. And I'm just wondering if my patent officer was, or I misunderstood my patent officer on that aspect.
Is it, by patent officer, do you mean your patent examiner or your patent agent?
I've got a guy that just like you that I have approached, and he's actually you know, a lawyer that does this. He's an attorney for that.
So he's your agent?
My agent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's your advocate. Well, yes, patents are published. They're made available on the Internet unless you file a non-publication request and comply with some special requirements. But they are published 18 months after you file them. So that's why it is so important to understand the relationship of marketing to the patent process. When you file that patent application, you want to be marketing that, you know, in tandem with the application process. That application will protect you and give you the filing date, but at the point where that patent application becomes published, you would hope that it would be noticed to competitors that you filed for protection at an early date for a product that you are successful bringing to market and deter competitors from entering a market after they've seen the success of your product. In theory, that's how it's supposed to work. Usually, by the time a patent application is published, it is 18 months. The law does give you 18 months to operate in secrecy. So your competitors are a year and a half behind you. And if you've been marketing and developing your product, all will go well. If you are an independent inventor or a small company that is maybe having difficulty getting funds together to develop the product, which may have been the situation of the first caller, that publication can be a concern. And, you know, you may want to delay filing the application and operate in secrecy, even though you'll get a later filing date, and that allows other competitors to jump in with an earlier filing date until you are able to bring that product to market. But you have to actively be marketing and seeking investors, developing your prototypes for that patent process and the publication to work as it should. But every situation is different. Every product is different. Certainly, if you have a simple product that you want to get out there and you're worried about competitors copying that instantly, the publication can be very, very helpful. If you have a large competitor that sees the application, thinks this is a good product to manufacture, you know, they may or may not be able to catch up to you in that 18-month span. What likely happened with the first caller is that in a competitive marketplace, many companies were developing something in tandem. And it might not have been an identical product, but it might have been a similar one that competed with her, and she felt that she was late in getting to market for various reasons. So I don't think that was a patent issue alone. But yes, you will have that patent application published 18 months after you file it, Don.
And Don, good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's get Ted in Baraboo and give him a chance. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes. I'm an artist, and back in 1965, I created a logo-like character for a high school for their athletic department, and I never registered or anything. And now I see, after all these years, that they're using my design over and over and over again for everything. And I wonder if I have any legal status at all.
So you created a logo, how many years ago is this?
1965.
Okay. And again, as the situation with the first caller, you designed a logo. Were you commissioned to create that logo?
That's right.
Okay. And so do you remember what you signed way back in 1965?
What? Say that again?
Do you remember what you may have signed as a contract?
Oh, no, I never signed any contract. They asked me to do it. I did it, and that was as far as it went.
Were you paid for it?
I was not paid for it.
Okay.
Okay, you were not paid for it, but it had their word mark or their identification information on it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. It's an image of a Thunderbird that they've used for their sports team since 1960 sometime, and now I see they're using it on their book covers and in the building here and there, and I see it even being used out in the street where people say that they're a Thunderbird fan and they have a sign they put up in their yard.
And we're growing late in the program with about 30 seconds for an answer.
Okay, well, again, it's hard to know what you intended to transfer and what the other party intended to transfer. But if I were you, I would look to make sure that all these people that are producing these different products are the same company that you had a deal with, that you signed or negotiated this to. And if there are different entities, you maybe didn't intend to transfer the rights to these different parties.
Ted, good luck to you. And Jill, thank you so much for spending time with us again this morning. It's been a real pleasure. We've learned a lot.
Thank you.
Jill Gilbert-Wellytalk is a registered patent attorney, a CPA, the managing attorney of Absolute Technology Law in Milwaukee. Her website for dealing on patent issues that we've talked about, milwaukeepatents.com. Our thanks to Rachel Owens for on-air production today. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll be conversing with Lisa Johnson, Dane County Extension horticulture educator, and we'll invite your calls then at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.